Hi, I'm Tony Robbins, and welcome to another edition of Power Talk, Achieving Your Ultimate Goal. So what is it? Have I gotten your curiosity? How could I possibly know what your ultimate goals are? How dare I even think this way? But you know what? I think I can really say what it is. You might tell me that my ultimate goal is to make a huge difference in the world. My ultimate goal is to raise my children to be strong individuals and make a difference in their lives and the people that they get to know and touch. You might say, no, my goal is to make $1 billion, $1 million, $100 million. No, my goal is just to be the best I am moment to moment. See, you might say my goal is to have a sailboat and go around the world. But the truth is, none of those are your ultimate goal. What are you doing it all for? Why are you working so hard to support your children and get them to be good people? Why are you really wanting to make a difference? Why do you want the sailboat? Why do you want the Jaguar or the Ferrari? Or why is it that you want to travel around the world? What's the sailboat for? What is all this stuff that's been driving you? What's really behind it all? And the answer, I believe, is there's only one goal you really have, to be happy. You really want, and you may word it differently than I'm using. You may not use the word happiness, but you want a consistent sense of pleasure within your being. And you know what? You deserve it. But there's a problem. The problem is that you and I have been conditioned. We've been conditioned in a variety of ways that keep us from really having the happiness that we pursue so heavily. It's right there within us right now. We don't have to do anything for it. And you and I know that intellectually, right? We go, yeah, I know I could be happy. So why aren't you? And you might say, well, I am happy. Are you happy all the time? I know I'm not, but I'm getting better because I'm beginning to learn how to take control of this thing between my ears. I'm learning how to direct and control my own mind. And the better I get at that, the happier I am. So I thought it might be nice in this month's conversation for you and I to really talk about what the heck is this thing called happiness? How do we get it? Or maybe better yet, how do we experience it more consistently? What prevents us and what can allow us to experience it more? You know, I was reading an article in Newsweek, and the cover article was about Prozac, P-R-O-Z-A-C. It's our nation's most prescribed antidepressant. It hit the market way back in December of 1987. According to the article, 15 million Americans are clinically depressed, which is a great way to give yourself a label to feel bad about even more on a consistent basis. All these people are taking this drug like it's coming out their ears, and they want it because it has less side effects than the other antidepressants. The other things that are supposed to keep us from feeling bad so we can eventually feel good and be happy. But there is a problem. There are side effects even to this new drug that's new and improved. The old antidepressants used to have really unpleasant side effects. You know, things like being deadly. If you took them and you ate pickles, you die. That's kind of a negative side effect. Not only that, created low blood pressure, created some heart disturbances, which could affect your happiness in the long term, at least the people around you. Things like sluggishness, dizziness, blurred vision, constipation, and weight gain. And given the alternatives, I think some patients would opt for depression. You know, the bottom line is, I'm not going to do this. But they say, no, we've got a new solution to your happiness. Prozac. It's the solution. And we're going to go for it to the tune of $500 million this year. But unfortunately, it has side effects too, although we don't talk about that too much because we're all looking for the instant fix, the happiness. Give me a chemical and everything will be great. But, you know, Prozac's got some problems. It gives you headaches. It makes you nauseated. It causes insomnia. It makes you jittery. And those are just the light ones. What are the bigger problems? Well, bigger problems are things like heart seizures. In fact, there was an article recently written by a research team from Harvard Medical School. It was headed up by Dr. Martin Teicher. Their research reported that in 3.5% of the patients who took Prozac, patients, by the way, who previously had not been manic, violent, or suicidal, that 3.5% of those people became intensely violent and had a suicidal preoccupation after only 2 to 7 weeks of using the drug. What's my point in this whole conversation? My point is we're a culture that's been conditioned to reach for an instant solution to receive happiness, to get away from the pain and get the pleasure. What is happiness? It's feeling good. And we've all learned different ways to do it. Some of us have learned that what we need to do is go to school for 14 years and then get out in the marketplace and be a doctor or be a lawyer so that we can begin to feel good about ourselves or so other people feel good about us. We've all been taught what has to happen first to be happy. But you know what? It's the emperor's new clothes. It's all a lie. Why do so many people drink alcohol to excess? Why do people smoke cigarettes? Why is cocaine the number one selling retail product in North America with over $100 billion in sales? These are all devices that people have learned to use to try and change the way they feel, to try and make themselves feel good, to feel happy. But the problem is none of them work long term. Even the highest high that a person can get from cocaine only lasts a short period of time. And the contrast when a person crashes to their normal state is intense. That's where the addiction comes from. And what we've got to learn to do is tap into the natural drug, if you will. Because it's not a drug. It's the natural source that's within every one of us at every moment of our life. We've got to stop buying into this false idea that something on the outside will ever make us happy, whether it be accomplishment or cocaine. Neither one's going to do it. Not long term. Plus, you cannot imagine the difference of joy that's inside of you if you just allow yourself to feel it. You can be happy right now. And if you doubt it, think about something. Have you ever seen a newborn baby? What are newborn babies like? They're happy about everything, aren't they? They're happy about the sky. They're happy about a smile. They're happy when they pass gas. When the people around them are happy, they go, "Isn't that cute? Look at this little baby. Oh, this is so cute." And we get happy about this stuff too. It's funny how human beings are. We think we're going to get the happiness on the outside, but where does it really come from? Yeah, you know, it's the inside. And nothing on the outside is ever going to give it long term. You say, "Yeah, but I made my $1 million and I felt happy." For how long? I did it too. It was kind of a neat feeling. But it wasn't what I thought it would be. And as soon as it was done, it was over. You know, you get a new relationship. You say, "Well, the relationship I'm in, that's not making me happy. I need a new relationship." And what happens? You're with this new person. Everything's great. You're so excited. You feel so close to them. You think about them constantly. You wake up thinking about them. You call them up in the middle of the night and say, "Gosh, you know, were you thinking of me?" And they say, "Yes." And you feel so good. And how long does that last? Anywhere from 15 years to 15 minutes to 15 seconds. And all of a sudden it changes slightly. Because all the things that you're looking for on the outside only provide temporary feelings of joy. But you know what's exciting? Inside of you at this moment, as you listen to my voice, there's an unlimited sense of happiness and joy. It is your natural state. And it's the thing that you unleash, but you only unleash it when you meet the rules of your conditioning. What do I mean? Well, think about it. What does it take for you to be happy? What really does it take for you to feel totally joyous inside? Will you be drunk with joy? Not with alcohol, with joy. Will you just feel incredible inside? What has to happen? What has to happen for you personally? Do you got to change the world? Do you got to just touch another person's life? Do you got to read a book? Do you got to watch a TV program? Do you got to listen to some music? Could you just feel it? See, when you listen to the music, or you make a difference. In those moments, who creates that feeling inside of you? Isn't it really just you? That stuff's inside, waiting to get out. But you have these rules about what has to happen. If X, Y, and Z occurs, then I can allow myself to feel good. What if you changed the rules and made happiness a natural way of living? See, one of my favorite places to go in the world is Fiji, the Fijian Islands. In fact, I own a resort there now. And I went there originally, you know, to achieve, to succeed, to go with friends, you know, to see a portion of the world, you know, to be a world traveler, to go buy some property so I could be really intelligent and have a place in paradise. But, you know, something happened when I got there. I spent all this time to try and get to Fiji, to get to where I could be happy. And along the way, I was in terrible shape. And my wife and I stopped in Hawaii along the way to split the trip in half. And I'll never forget that day sitting on the beach in Hawaii in quote-unquote paradise with all this beauty around us. And we were freaking out because we had all these things we had to do. And here we are going to take off. And we really couldn't take off because if we did that, it would mean all these other things. And if we didn't do this, it would mean that. If we didn't this, it would mean that. It would mean pain, 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 unhappiness, unhappiness, frustration, anger, maybe even some depression. The point is, we finally made it to Fiji. We've traveled for 11 hours by flight. I'm totally fried. Now, we get into a car. And it's hot outside. Now, I don't like it when it's hot because, see, heat and humidity does not make me happy. So I was very angry that I could travel 11 hours, and I asked in advance. I asked the travel agent, I said, "Is it humid in Fiji?" He said, "No." I got there, and it was burning up at 6:30 in the morning. I was sweating. I was saturated. I was so angry. I wanted to get on the plane and leave. I was not a happy camper. So what do? Well, we drove for 2 hours to go to this hotel that the travel agent said is one of the 10 top hotels in the world. I was so excited. We pulled up about 8:30 a.m. One lone Fijian walked out front. The place was horrible. It was all beat up, and I'm not going to tell you the name because I don't want to tear down the hotel, but this is not the place to go to. All I can tell you is they put me in this little tiny room. I'm 6'7". My head is scraping on the ceiling. There's no telephone. There's no TV. There's no radio. I'm going, "Where is civilization? I can't be happy here." I thought, well, at least I'm going to get into the ocean. Because, see, I had this picture inside my head that if I could just go into this absolutely beautiful ocean and just enter into it, then I would be happy. And I went out there, and you couldn't get to the ocean until you put on your tennis shoes and walked half a mile out on coral so you could step over the edge. And then it began to rain. Now I was really unhappy. The bottom line is, I got so angry, I got so frustrated, I felt like a nice little victim. And I thought, no, I can be happy, I can do something to change this. And so, sure enough, I made it to the one phone in the building. And I called some of the other islands. I said, what's your weather like? They said, it's sunny and beautiful. I said, where are you? They told me. I said, I'm coming there. I'll rent a plane. I'll do whatever it takes. I must go where I can be happy. Well, sure enough, what happens? He said, where are you? I told him. He said, well, the reason it's so hot there is because you're on the humid side of that one big island. That's the only place that's like that. I thought, how is it I managed to go to the only place that doesn't meet my needs? So sure enough, I get in a car. I jump in the plane. I fly to this island. We land on this island. I realize there's only one phone on this island as well. Freaks me out. How am I going to make my calls? How am I going to stay in touch? I get out on the beach. I'm sitting there on the beach. My wife and I, we're totally exhausted. We're emotionally drained because we worked so hard for so long to get to a point where we could be happy. We're sitting on the beach. We finally walk in the water. And you know what? The minute we got in the water, we were happy. It was amazing. It was crystal clear and you could just look through it. And I mean, the very beginning part was like champagne color. And as it went out a little further, it was that, you know, beautiful turquoise. And as it went out even further, it was azure blue. And I knew that now I could be happy because here we were, and the water was like, you know, 89 degrees. It was magnificent. And we had such a great time. Now I got a question for you. Did we have to travel 11 hours, go to 3 or 4 hotels, rent little private planes so we could make it to a beach to feel happy? Yes, absolutely, because we were conditioned to feel that way. Did we really have to do it? No way. You know what Fiji has taught me and the reason I go back there? To be happy, no. I go back there for one simple reason. Because while I was there, I had experiences that changed my life because they taught me where real happiness comes from. Because of all the places in the world I've had the good fortune to travel to, I would say as a generalization, the people of Fiji have been taught that happiness is a natural state of mind. See, I traveled and I got on a plane and I wasn't satisfied, by the way, just to sit on the beach. Of course not. I must accomplish to be happy. I must achieve. I must do something. So sure enough, I rented this private little seaplane. And my wife and I took this and we landed in, you know, island after island. There are 300 little islands in Fiji. It's really an amazing place. And we kept landing. We landed in the Blue Lagoon and walked out on these private islands. And we were absolutely in ecstasy. And eventually, though, we started staying in places. And we got a chance to know the Fijian people. And one day we decided to drive out 2.5 hours in this one island to see this piece of property that I was supposed to buy so I could be happy. And so sure enough, we drive out there and we jumped in this taxi cab and this man took us down what he called the Hibiscus Highway, which was actually a dirt road. And as we drove down the Hibiscus Highway where bridges are basically two planks across the river, and sure enough, you're driving along and this guy's going 50 miles to 60 miles an hour, smacking coconuts flying everywhere, dust flying in the air, and we're trying to go out to find this property so that we can find something to buy so we can feel happy. And we get all the way out there and it's pouring rain, and it was terrible and I hated it. And instead of feeling bad, though, somehow I guess the Fijian people began to influence me because no matter where we drove along this Hibiscus Highway, the Fijian men and women would jump up, shake their hands in the air and scream, Bula, 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 which means welcome, be happy, we love you. And they did it consistently, not because they were happy to see a tourist or because they were taught to, because that's just the way they live, because they believe happiness is the natural state. And we got out to the property, and it wasn't what we wanted. But you know what? I had so much fun in the process that I didn't have to get the goal anymore to feel good. That was a nice little lesson. That, yeah, I could pursue the goal, but I might enjoy the process along the way. Maybe I'll come up with a better goal. Who knows? And along the way, we saw these wonderful children, and my wife said, hey, do you think we could stop and take a picture of these kids? I said, yeah, but let's ask permission to be respectful. So sure enough, we pulled aside, and I went up to this group, and it was in this village. Now, bear in mind, here we are, 11,000 miles away from home. Out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, on this one island called Vanuatu, which is one of the northernmost islands in the entire group. And now we're 2.5 hours into the jungle and we're on the edge of the water. And here's this little village on stilts. And I looked over and saw a group of big Fijian men. And one of them approached me and I tried to communicate to them. And I said, hi, I was just wondering if we could take a photograph of your daughter. And this man said, hi, my name is Joe. In the middle of this village, in the middle of nowhere, he said, certainly you could take a picture. Would you like to come in and join us for some grog? And I don't drink anything, alcohol or anything else, but I thought, what the heck? Let's go check this out. So here I am on this village, and he then told me that my wife had to stay outside. Now, if you listen to the relationship section of this Power Talk, you can imagine the kind of impact that had. But my wife went over, and she had a chance to visit with the women of that culture, and there are different rules about their conditioning. So I went in this little room. And I'm in this room, and there's about 35 Fijian men. And as I entered, all I could see were those big smiles because it was dark. The sun was just going down. And they were all around this big, giant wooden bowl full of this muddy, water-looking substance they called kava. And they all seemed so happy. They just smiled. They didn't know who I was from Adam, but they just were like so loving. It was unbelievable. And so I sat down and sat in a circle with them, and they started asking me questions of where I was from, what's going on, because they'd see like one visitor a year out in this village, literally. And so I sat down there, and they said, well, listen, this is our great ceremony, and we would like you to participate with us. And they said, here's how it works. What you do is you drink this stuff, and you clap your hand three times, and you say, bula, bula, bula. I said, hey, I'm up for it. Let's go for it. So I drank this stuff, and sure enough, clapped my hands, bula, 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 and they all did the same. And it tasted like dirt. It tasted terrible. It was like drinking muddy water. I thought, how could they possibly drink this and make themselves feel happy? I guess they've been conditioned very much like people who learn to smoke cigarettes to feel happy. Or drink alcohol, or go to a movie. Not that there's anything wrong with it, just that we've been conditioned that's the way to do it. Bottom line for them, it's drink muddy water. And you know what? It really works. It works as well as what we've been conditioned by advertisers to believe, that we buy that car, we're going to feel good. It seems to work. And as I sat there talking with these guys, I turned to these men one by one, and I asked them, I said, you all seem so happy. How come you're happy? And they just smiled and said, because that's what life's about. I said, what do you mean that's what life's about? I said, what's the purpose of life? And they grinned at me and said, to be happy, of course. What else is there? And they just grinned and giggled like, gosh, they weren't like judging me, but gosh, don't you know? What are you, new? You know, and thought to myself, could life really be that simple? And I felt so good. I felt so loved and appreciated. And they all said, let's have Tony have another one. And I thought, oh no, right? They said, here, Tony, and they give me another half of a coconut full of this stuff, because that's the glasses they use. They cut a coconut in half, they put this muddy water in it. And I said, well, they said, oh, go ahead, go ahead. So sure enough, I drank it, clapped my hands, bula, bula, bula. My mouth tasted like heck. And I thought, oh gosh. And I smiled real big, and they all said, oh, this is great for Tony. Let's have Tony have another one. And after about 12 little coconuts full of kava, I was ready to leave. And I went outside, and I said, can you show me how you make this stuff? I want to try and distract them. But as I spent more and more time with them, I was unbelievably touched by their love, by their sensitivity, by their way of approaching life. And after we looked at how they grew kava and all the years they spent to get this incredible root that was supposed to make them happy, they decided to break a rule. By the way, breaking rules can sometimes be useful, especially when your rules are limiting you. Something to consider. The rule they broke is women aren't supposed to be allowed in this kava hall. But they allowed my wife to come in. And she wasn't insulted by being on the outside to start with. She knew she was more than some custom. And she wanted to be respectful of their customs as well. But she was really acknowledged. And we came in and we sat down on the floor together. They brought in a kerosene lamp, which they never used, but it was a special occasion. And pretty soon the room was filled with almost the entire village. And we all sat down and they began to sing to us in these incredible voices that I'll never forget. And all I can remember is feeling more love and more happiness than I can remember experiencing in years and years and years. And what was interesting was, I wasn't doing a seminar. I wasn't doing a tape. I wasn't writing a book. I wasn't, you know, going out and changing the entire world. I wasn't making bunches of money. I wasn't flying my helicopter. I wasn't receiving accolades. I was just being with other people and allowing my natural state to flow from me. The natural state that we pursue so much called happiness. This natural feeling, this natural state of just feeling good because you're alive. And I remember these children looking me in the eyes with a level of depth and intensity that felt like they were looking right into my soul. And then them smiling and how that lit up my entire being. And there came a point when it was time to go, because here we are in the middle of the jungle and we knew that our friends back at the hotel would probably be worried about us. They didn't want us to leave. They want us to stay. You know what's great? They didn't want anything from us. Just our happiness. Just to be with us. Just to share those special feelings that only human beings can share with each other. And so just before we left, they sang us a final song, which we've now grown to love, and we've heard it over and over again. It's a goodbye song that's traditional for the Fijian people. And as they sang the song about coming back and visiting with them again, I began to cry. I realized this was a part of myself that I'd not felt enough, even though I was out there making this difference, even though I could be proud about what I've accomplished in my life. All those things were not giving me the same level of happiness I was having just being there with these people. And it gave me a lesson in life that I've not forgotten, one that's enhanced my life at a whole new level. And as we left and waved goodbye, I thought, we've got to come back here sometime just to thank these people for teaching us what being civilized really is. Maybe civilization doesn't make us very civilized. Maybe what it does is disassociate us. Maybe it conditions us to believe that something on the outside will give us the inner joy that already exists. And what I've learned to do is resist the conditioning. Doesn't mean that I can't enjoy it. Doesn't mean I can't see it. But I guess what I've learned, and I hope that you and I will remember, I know we already know it, but you and I will remember, is that oftentimes we mistake an occasion we utilize to allow ourselves to feel joy as being the source of our joy. I give you an example. I remember one time I was with my youngest son, Jarek, and we were in our car and the car broke down. And it was a hot day. And we were out in the San Gabriel Valley and it was smoggy and it was tough. And we were waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for a tow truck to come, and it didn't come. And so instead of being all angry and upset, I thought to myself, this is stupid. I'm with my son. I can have a wonderful time. And the experience transformed because I asked a better question. I said, what could I do right now that would create joy for Jarek and myself? And I began to focus on different things we could talk about. And it turned into this special moment that I won't forget for many, many years. And we had this incredible bond and love right there, just in that moment, sitting in this hot car on this smoggy day, waiting for things to happen. And I could have focused on where we're waiting for it to happen and been upset, but instead I focused on, what can we do right now to create more joy? And you know what? We get whatever we focus on. That's how powerful the human brain is. And what's interesting, though, is how my son interpreted it. I remember about a couple months later, we were talking about something else, and all of a sudden I knew he wanted some attention. He said, Dad, can we go sit in the car out in the sun? And I thought, isn't that interesting? See, it's okay for us to say, well, a little kid doesn't know better, so they link up that the car is the source of that connection and happiness. But don't you and I do the same thing as adults? Don't we start thinking it's the education or the PhD or the car or the home or the income or the level of success in business or the quality of the article we write or whatever the case may be? Haven't we been seduced, at times at least? Maybe it's time we realize that it is the emperor's new clothes and that what we're doing is we're trying to cover up what's natural. That really our happiness is always there inside of us, and there's more of it there than you can ever get from something from the outside. So the question of this tape is, how do we achieve that ultimate goal? And by the way, you may be saying, well, this sounds really nice. You've been really nice and sensitive, and I like these kinds of feelings, but why is this going to help me in my job? How is this going to help me in my life? I mean, what are you saying? I should just go bliss out in Fiji? Is that what you're saying to me? No, all I'm talking about is balance. Life is a balance. I'm talking about having that balance. And I'll tell you, one of the most powerful changes that shifted my life, it's just an idea. But it's an idea that if you were to apply it, as simple as it is, if you were to actually live it, it could instantly change the quality of your life. And that idea is simply this. All of my life, I was conditioned to believe that if I achieved enough, if I helped enough people, if I did enough things, that I would be happy. So I was working very hard so I could achieve, so I could eventually be happy. And one day, I got this new concept in my head. What if I happily achieved? What if my goal was not to achieve, but my goal was to be happy? And that while I was happy, I was going to do things that contributed and made a difference, which will be great references for the power that I had when I unleashed and experienced the ultimate human emotion. I got to tell you what, the idea of putting happiness as higher on my list of values than achievement was a little scary for me at first. Because I thought, boy, if I feel happy, then I won't be driven to achieve. Maybe I won't want to work as hard. Maybe I won't help as many people. Maybe all these things that I identify with my life, maybe I won't have that same level of motivation. Maybe I got to keep achieving because that makes me, you know, a person who contributes. And then eventually I can be happy. I don't want to take that away because I'll lose my drive. I was wrong. I was scared, but I was wrong. What happened was when I finally decided I was going to be happy along the way, that life was not an outcome, that it was a process, that I would achieve things and say, is this all there is? Unless along the way I enjoyed the process, that I was going to spend more of my time in life in the process than I was achieving. And if I wanted to be happy more of the time, I got to get committed to that idea. The minute I started living that way, my life changed and I went to a whole new level. I thought I was successful before. I thought, boy, look, I got my act together. All I can tell you is I got a new level of depth. So how do we create this real balance? How can we take what we've talked about thus far in this tape and make it practical so you can really use it, so you can really experience more of this big promise I've been telling you about, of that joy inside of you that you know is there? Well, let me give you 8 points. Number one, we've already talked about. The first key to unleashing your happiness is to remember it's already there, to remember it's your natural state. Just think about it. Think about what's inside of you. I think that most people's unhappiness, that really the root of all human misery, is the ignorance of our true nature and power. That it's all inside of us, it's not on the outside. See, most of us have been conditioned to believe that being happy is difficult instead of what's always there. See, I believe to be unhappy, you got to pervert your reality. Now, I've managed to pull this off in my own life and many times, as I'm sure you have, but the reality of our existence is joy. In order to be unhappy, you got to develop false beliefs about what life is. You got to begin to believe that all these things have to occur for you to feel appreciative for this thing called life. In fact, we've developed all these rules about all these different things that specifically have to occur at specific times and specific ways before we get to have those great feelings that we want inside. We begin to think that events are the source of our happiness, or that another person is the source of our happiness, or our kids are the source of our happiness, or our career is the source of our happiness. We start thinking we need another person to think that we can feel love inside of us, that it's coming from him or her. That's their enchanting words or those beloved whispers in our ears. That's what makes us feel really good. That's what makes us feel love. That's what makes us feel happy. But we seldom stop to really consider, what are those feelings of love or security or peace? Where are they coming from? When we feel them in that moment, where are they coming from? Are they like sneaking out of that person's lips or mouth and into our ear and into our body and make us feel good? Of course not. We're unleashing those within ourselves in that moment. But you know what happens is, we have a situation like this where we feel good for a moment because of something on the outside. We've met one of our rules, and we think that that's real happiness when we've really got an infinite reservoir of joy that's deep inside of us that goes beyond anything you've ever felt before. And when something outside of us triggers it, it's usually like a little tiny trickle of joy that flows out. And what do we think? We go, boy, I'm so lucky that I have that person in my life, which you probably are, but that's not the source of your happiness. Because if that's the source of your happiness, what if that person never goes away? A little scary, huh? Or what if they pass away? Or what if something separates you at some time? You see, the fear that most people have in their lives of not being happy is because they think it's coming from the outside. They experience the object of their senses, and when they taste it, they think, boy, that joy is coming from that object, from that person, from that event. But in fact, we're only tasting our own inner feelings that are existing continuously. They're constant. And all that sweetness and all that love that you want so bad is flowing through your veins and your heart right now. There's a sea of real power inside of you. Everyone has this place inside of them, and all we've got to do is tap into it, touch it. But you can't do that as long as you believe happiness is on the outside. As long as you believe happiness is a reward. Happiness is not a reward. The reward is life itself. Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't go out and strive to achieve or contribute or to make a difference, or do something for society, or make money, or go do things that make you have fun and play. I'm just saying, don't hold yourself hostage by the false belief that anything outside you will give you the real joy. And instead, develop an insatiable curiosity for digging deeper inside yourself. And when you feel good, saying, where'd that come from? Where can I get more of that? Instead of the outside, how could I let myself feel that way even more? Happiness is nothing but a state. Feeling good is a state of mind and emotion. And you can have it any moment simply by claiming it. How do you claim it? Two ways. One, change the way you're using your body. If you're not feeling happy right now, I guarantee you may be doing several things. One is you may not be breathing. Now you say, what are you talking about? I'm breathing. Sure you are. But are there times when, like, you're frustrated or you're angry or you're concerned? Does your breathing pattern change? I can guarantee it does. What about your facial expressions? See, if you change your facial expressions, you immediately change how you feel. Try this right now. No one's around. They're not noticing. Put a big, stupid, silly grin on your face. Oh, come on. Nobody's going to notice. If you're in your car, turn to some other person who's in the traffic and grin at them with that big, huge grin and watch what happens. They'll think you're on drugs. It's okay. Just go ahead and do it. Try it. Do it right now. Come on. Smile real big. And while you're doing this big smile on your face, thinking this is stupid and crazy, notice how you feel. See, you have 80 different muscles in your face. If you change the way you use them, you can make yourself feel happy, and I bet you already know the ways to do it. In fact, if I asked you to get depressed, you could pull that off, couldn't you? The point is simple. You can change the way you use your body and change your level of happiness. What else can you do? Well, let's go to step two of these eight or however many points I decide to make out of these. Number two is really simply this. Change your focus and you change your level of happiness. Remember, it's not only your physical body and your beliefs that determine how happy you are, but what are you focusing on? See, right now you could get totally depressed. How would you do it? Well, you could use your body in ways that make you feel depressed, but also you could do it just by focusing on things that don't make it feel good. You could feel sad or you could feel angry. Couldn't you think of people that have wronged you in your past? Focus on that enough that you really began to feel it again and feel real angry all over again, even though they're not here. If you really wanted it, couldn't you do that? Couldn't you feel really sad remembering things you missed out on? All you'd have to do is focus on them. What about joy? What about pleasure? What about ecstasy? Can you remember a time in your life when you were feeling feelings and emotions of absolute ecstasy? How good that really felt, whatever it was. Could you go back to that time and remember it, actually re-experience the feelings, begin to breathe and feel the same way until you felt so good inside? Can you remember times when you felt totally loved? See, when I started talking to you about Fiji, guess what happened to me? I started feeling it all over again. I could have just been there. I was there, even as I shared it with you. If you're unhappy right now, it's because you're not controlling the focus of your mind. You're focusing on something that makes you feel lousy. See, it all depends on what you focus on. That's what's going to determine how you feel. Nothing more. Remember, nothing in life has any meaning except the meaning that you give it. And the meaning you give things is usually based on what you choose to focus on. So control your focus. Here's step 3 to happiness. Ask happy questions. Ask empowering questions. Now, if you spend any time with me, you know I talk all the time about physiology, changing focus, and on asking better questions. And the reason I talk about those is they are the fundamental control tools to your brain, your mind, and your emotions, and therefore the quality of your life. Questions you need to ask yourself when things come up is not, what does this mean? By the way, that's the natural question that comes up. Your brain is always trying to avoid pain and gain pleasure. It's the way you're wired. It's a survival instinct. Whenever you're going to go do something, your brain says, what does this mean? And what should I do? Is it going to mean pain or is it going to mean pleasure? Is it going to lead me toward more things that I want, or is it going to take me down a road that I don't want to be in based on my past experience? And the bottom line is, in pursuit of what does this mean, we get to points where we're not sure what things are going to mean. So let's say you want to make an investment. Should I invest in the stock or not? Well, the brain's asking, what is it going to mean? If I invest in the stock, is it going to mean pleasure, i.e. profit, and I'm going to feel good and have more money and things will be nice? Or is it going to mean pain? I'm going to lose what I've got here, or it's not going to grow at all. But see, the problem is, if you ask, what is this going to mean, it's very difficult to be certain, absolutely certain, which one it's going to lead to. And that's where people drive themselves a bit crazy. I'll give you an even more challenging situation. Sometimes you try and do everything right and things turn up wrong, and then you try and figure out why they turned up wrong. Why is it you gave your all and it still didn't work, or somebody didn't acknowledge it, or didn't get supported, or there's an idea that's so useful, but no one will listen to you right now. Or you worked all night on a project, and then your dog ate it the next morning. If you ask questions like, what does this mean, you might come up with answers like, well, it's another example of me sabotaging myself. Maybe you're not sabotaging yourself. That makes you just feel bad about yourself. Maybe you just weren't smart. Maybe you let the dog eat your thing because you didn't put it on a higher shelf. Maybe you were just stupid. Maybe you weren't sabotaging. Look at it that way. See, we got to be careful about the meaning we give things by asking the question, what does this mean? A better question for us to ask in those times is, how can I use this? See, if you ask, how can I use this? It's different than what does this mean? You may never know what it means. Hey, I have a friend whose entire body got burned off in a car accident, and then he survived that only to go through another wonderful experience where he was in an airplane crash and he's paralyzed from the waist down for life. I have another friend that got to live 7.5 years in a POW camp in Vietnam. If they kept asking, what does this mean, they'd drive themselves crazy. Like, why is this happening to me? That's not going to help you. Better question, how can I use this? How is this important in my life? What can I learn from this? These are the kinds of questions that'll make you feel happier, that'll make you feel good in your life, because ask and you shall receive. If you want a better quality of life, if you want more happiness, ask questions that lead you to a place where you feel better about yourself and your environment. I guarantee if you do not feel happy on a regular basis, it's because you've got a set of habitual questions you ask yourself, like, why does this always happen to me? Or why can't I pull this off? And again, if you say, why can't I? Your brain says, ask and you shall receive. Here's why you can't, because you're stupid and you're an idiot and you don't follow through. Because you sabotage. It'll come up with a reason whether it's true or not. So you got to take control of the question asking process. So what am I really happy about in my life right now would be a good question. Now if your brain goes, nothing, the next question is, what could I be happy about if I wanted to be happy about something? What am I really enjoying in my life right now? What could I be excited about if I wanted to be excited? What's really wonderful in my life? What's great about this? What is working? See, these are questions that will really support you. And if you're in a lousy state, you don't ask questions like, how much longer will this last? Or, can I survive this? Can I survive? This makes you doubt whether you can even make it through where you are. Those are disempowering questions. Instead, if you want to break out of that state, you might want to ask a question like, well, will this even matter 10 years from now? Or maybe a question like, what's actually funny about this? You know, and if you keep asking it, you may find there's a lot of things you can laugh at. In fact, most people say, you know, someday I'm going to look back and laugh at this. Why not turn around and laugh at it now? Why wait? So you just ask a better question. You can get the answer now. It's not that difficult. So that's key number 3. Ask effective questions. Control the focus of your mind by asking questions. The 4th key to experience consistent happiness, and boy, I'll tell you one, this is a big one. Learn to be a perceiver instead of a judger. What do I mean by that? Well, there's a problem with judging too quickly. And that is when you judge what things mean too quickly, oftentimes you feel pain about things you don't have to feel pain about. For example, you ever gotten upset about what you thought somebody said, and later on you find out that's not what they said or it's not what they meant, and you're all uptight about it because you felt that they had judged you, you had decided that's what things had meant? later on you found out something differently, or maybe you had an experience like I've had. I felt like somebody was giving me the runaround one day, and they were, everything I tried to accomplish, they seemed to get in my way of accomplishing it. I felt like they were trying to manipulate me. And I started to get kind of angry, quite honestly, inside, because I was like, man, I had judged these people are just trying to manipulate me. And sure enough, they got me to this place, and we locked in this building, and we turned on the lights, and it was a surprise birthday party. I had judged instead of allowing myself to perceive and wait and see, what does this really mean? Sometimes it's useful to reserve judgment till you know more, till you've been exposed to more. You and I empower our lives whenever we allow ourselves to have a new level of choice as to what things mean. I'll give you an example. Have you had a day in your life that you would look back on and would say, gosh, it was one of the worst days of my life. It was so frustrating, so angry. I was so hurt by that person. Don't we all have some place in our life that if I said, what was the ultimate, most painful experience of your life, you could remember it and go back to it if you really needed to. The question I'd have for you is, if you remembered a time like that, would it be fair to say that as you look back on it now, that the meaning is different than it was back then? That as you look back on it now, you may see, gosh, it was painful, but that pain kind of shaped a part of my life and has made me more sensitive to other people. Maybe you were abused as a child, and that sensitivity now makes you care more deeply for other people. It would make sure that you would never behave the way you were treated, as an example. Or maybe what happened is you had a painful experience in your life. At the end, you thought, man, that's the end. But as you look back on it now, it was really the beginning. That the reality is, if you look back on it now, it was so painful, it changed the direction of your life. And it's brought you to the place you are today. My point is, in your life, you're going to have good days and you're going to have bad days. But one thing is for absolutely certain. At the end of the day, you're not going to know which one they really are. Because some days you thought were your worst are going to turn out to be your best. So when you start judging as things being good or bad, soft or hard, the right or the wrong way to do something, maybe there isn't a right or a wrong way 100%. I'm not saying there aren't any rules. I'm just saying maybe we need to soften our view of life a little bit and give ourselves more space to learn and grow. That as we learn more about things, our view may change. But once we lock out that this is it, we stop our growth. See, knowledge is not power. Many times knowledge closes the door. It's like when you're a child, you know? It's like the door is open all the way up. You want to take everything in. But see, as you learn more and more, you begin to close the door more and more and more and more because you become more and more certain that you got the whole thing figured out. See, the thing we've got to discipline ourselves on is saying, hey, this feels right to me. I think I got it handled and I'm open to learning more. It seems like this is true, but I always want to know that the meaning may change as I learn more about this person or this situation. Once we start judging a person as being wrong or right, or a situation as being wrong or right, we start to shut that door and we take away our choice and we take away some of our happiness. We distance ourselves from people, events, opportunities, and certain emotions. And we don't want to do that. We don't want to rob ourselves of that. Now, by the way, I'm not suggesting you never judge what things mean. You got to decide, what's this going to mean to me in terms of pain or pleasure in your life? Is this going to move me closer to my goals or further away? I understand that. But let's not be so rigid and so absolute in our approach that we close the door. People start judging what things are going to mean in advance and make themselves feel terrible in advance about things. You know, the most classic story is, you know, the salesman who whips himself into a frenzy because they think they're going to call on somebody and they start anticipating all the ways this may not work out. And they sit there and they think about the person rejecting them and not supporting them or calling them names. And you know what? They start making it real inside their head. They start judging that the meaning of this interaction is going to be pain and they have no evidence to back it up except the pictures they've been making inside their brain. And sure enough, the guy gets so worked up that by the time he knocks on the door and the guy opens the door, he reaches out and punches the person right in the face and says, if that's how you feel about it, I don't even want to talk to you. I'm sure you heard some version of that story, but that's a classic example of judging things in advance. Maybe we need to stay a little more open than that in our approach to doing things. Just remember this. If you feel bad about something, it's because you've created a meaning out of this that does not support you. Come up with a better meaning. Maybe the person isn't rejecting you. Maybe they're busy. Maybe they're not rejecting you. Maybe they're having a tough time with their spouse. Maybe what's happening is they're caught up in something else. Maybe right now they're physically ill. See, you got to make sure that there are other meanings. And here's the question to ask yourself to release yourself from judgment. The question's simple. The question is there any other possible meaning that this could have? Or another question might be, what would be a better way of looking at this that would empower me and others? You know, in the case of the salesman, Zig Ziglar tells a story that I remember where he talked about one salesman calls on a house, and the people treat him really terrible, but he expects them to treat him lousy, and so he doesn't even notice they're treating him well. He basically rejects himself. Another salesman's really expecting something good. He gets up, and the people just thrash him. They're terrible with him. And when he closes the door, he thinks to himself, well, these people have a problem. I better call on somebody else who doesn't have the same problem. The same approach is true here. Ask yourself, when somebody attacks you, instead of saying, the meaning of this is they're being abusive to me and feeling bad about it, or how dare they treat me this way, a better question to ask yourself might be, I wonder what's going on with this person that makes them treat people this way. Would that make you feel different? You bet it would. The key here is to choose a meaning in the situation that makes you feel better, that makes you feel happier inside. Problems will come and problems will go. Problems will dissolve from your life. You don't want to dwell on them. You don't want to make things into more than they are. Allow yourself to move on and realize the more you judge in your life, the less happy you will be. The more you perceive, the more you'll be open to growing and learning and coming up with meanings that support you personally. See, the only way you eventually master meaning is by mastering your mind. By realizing, you determine the meaning that comes out of something. Nothing in life has any meaning except the meaning you give it. See, something isn't good or bad until you decide that's what it is, till you give it that label, and then it becomes a reality for you. And just remember this, the people that you may have once thought were successful may not have been successful at all for only one reason, they didn't master meaning. The John Belushis of the world were incredibly successful in getting other people to laugh. Obviously, he wasn't very good at getting himself to laugh at critical times. He didn't master the meaning of things. He created all the success around him as being something to feel bad about. That took effort. You gotta work at that thing. And I'm not being mean about someone who's no longer here because I was a great fan of his. But clearly he didn't master his mind, and that's why he's no longer here. Elvis Presley had a similar problem. And we can go on and on down the list. In fact, personally, I believe that if you have success on the exterior but you're not happy in the interior, you're far from successful. We've got to create a meaning that gives us joy on the inside while we share that joy with others, where our life truly does make a difference, but we enjoy the process. Otherwise, we live the ultimate nightmare, not the ultimate dream. Principle number 5 to having consistent happiness is learning a little bit of how to use your brain instead of having it use you. And the way to utilize it is using a simple principle of human perception, and that is the principle of contrast. Contrast is an invaluable way to change the way you feel about virtually anything. It's something that got used on you when you were a kid. So you may have been complaining about something. You had this perception that you turned into a judgment. You were judging. Boy, I need some new shoes. I'm upset. How come all the other kids have new shoes and I don't have new shoes? And you went to your parents and said, I want some new shoes. And your mother said, look, don't you complain about not having new shoes. Look at these people over here. They don't have any feet. And you went, you got a point. Okay. I can understand that. They use a little contrast on you and they just shut you down your tracks. They totally change what things meant to you by giving you a new reference, a contrasting reference, if that makes sense to you. We need to learn to do this for ourselves. We do it to ourselves in negative ways also. I'll never forget one time being on an airplane and this woman was sitting next to me and I was typing away on my computer, cranking out these ideas, and she looked at me, and she looked at me again, she looked at me again, and she said, oh my gosh, you're Tony Robbins. I said, well, yes, I am, as a matter of fact, I think. And I kind of teased with her a little bit. She goes, oh my gosh, she goes, I'm so pleased to meet you, and she was just so wonderful to me. She made me feel great. And then I realized, I'm feeling great. She isn't making me feel great. I'm using this as a chance to make myself feel great. I could have been feeling great before she said a word to me. I could have been feeling great because the sun was out. I could have been feeling great because I'm alive. But see, what I did is I used this situation to make myself feel great. The point is, she went on and on and told me about how her daughter really needs me. She said, my daughter needs you. She's beautiful. She's perfect. She's brilliant. She's a straight-A student. She just graduated from college, and she just started her own business. She went on and on and on. I said, then why does she need me? And she said, well, because she feels like a failure. I said, I don't understand. She said, well, it's her brother's. I said, oh, do they harass her? She said, no, they don't harass her. But she said, you know, they both are attorneys. They're top attorneys. They both own their own firms. They're partners in firms in Manhattan. And they both graduated summa cum laude. Now, top of their class. And so now they're super successes, by mom standards anyway, and by their own, I guess. I said, but I thought you said your daughter. She's a wonderful person. She's outstanding, and she's brilliant, and she's beautiful, and she's close, and she's emotional and supportive and all those wonderful things. She goes, yeah, but compared to her brother, she feels like a failure. And I thought, isn't that interesting? Isn't it interesting how we can, with our little thing called our brain, undisciplined, unconditioned, without perfecting our mind, how we can actually destroy our own selves, how we can make ourselves feel bad when we should be feeling good. Now, I could tell you that was her problem, but I got to tell you, I've been guilty of it too. And haven't you? Haven't you compared yourself to something or someone else and made yourself feel bad when you should have been feeling good? I remember when my first book came out, Unlimited Power. I was so excited and I had such high hopes for it. I wanted to do so many things. And I kind of forgot what my hopes were. My hopes were to have it be a bestseller so I could reach people. But as soon as I achieved that, I had bigger hopes. I wanted to sell 1 million copies and reach all these people in the world. And you know what? The first edition only reached 250,000 people. It was the number one book of its type for Simon & Schuster at that time. It was number five in the United States, but I felt like a failure. How could that possibly be? Answer, I compared myself to some of my best friends. People like Ken Blanchard, who wrote The One-Minute Manager, which sold almost 7 million copies worldwide. Or my friends Harvey Marilyn Diamond, when we worked together on a book called Fit for Life, and I got a chance to input quite a bit into that book. Number one selling diet book in history. Almost 3 million copies. Or my friend Robert Allen, who's the real estate expert. He wrote the book Creating Wealth and Nothing Down. Both million sellers. I looked around at them and I said, my gosh, I'm a failure. Now, my publisher, Simon & Schuster, is raving, saying, boy, we got this great bestseller. It's fantastic. And everybody's buying it all over the country. It's really super. And I felt like a failure. Now, what I didn't do is I didn't use contrast to my advantage. And that's what you want to do. You want to figure a way to contrast things so you feel good. You want to learn to be able to feel good about the fact that your shoes may be not looking so good by looking at somebody who doesn't have any feet, in essence. And that's what I did, too. See, we use it against it. We use it as a weapon instead of a tool. So I finally started using it as a tool, and I went, wait a second. I'm 26 years old. I've got a national best-selling book that's in 11 languages. I've done better than anybody thought I could do with this thing. It's number five in the United States. And also, I'm not 50 years old, which my buddy Ken Blanchard is, or 40, as my other buddies are. I'm nowhere near that. By the time I'm there, I should be able to reach even more people. I'm just getting started, and look at all the people that have been impacted. Then I began to say, is it how many people you reach or the depth at which you reach them? I asked better questions. I began to change the meaning, and I began to use contrast as a way to make myself feel even better. And what happened is it allowed me to enjoy myself and feel more happy right now and get the juice that's right there that I deserve to have. See, use contrast to your advantage instead of your disadvantage. And where have you used it as a weapon? You might want to think, well, when this tape is done, where are some places where you've compared yourself to other people, other situations? And I'll tell you another thing that'll help you in dealing with some of those situations. Remember, it's not where you start out, but where you end up that matters. And the way you're pursuing achieving in your life, you may find is not the way you're really going to achieve. Maybe all the experiences you're having right now are setting you up for something even greater. I have a friend who years ago told me, so Tony, remember, your gifts will make room for you. I found a way to reach even more people through television. In the last year, I've reached over 50 million people through television alone. So what I found was God's delays are not God's denials. Something useful to remember. The bottom line is what looks like a problem may be an opportunity, but you got to use contrast to your advantage. Here's number six. Number six key to achieving your ultimate goal on a regular basis, that is happiness, is very simple. Soften your rules. What do I mean by that? Well, you and I have talked about it, and I've alluded to it at least throughout this tape. We have developed a set of rules about what has to happen before we can feel good and have this experience called happiness. And unfortunately for many of us, we have very intense rules. That is, we have 80 things that have to occur before we can finally be happy. For example, today's woman, quote unquote, what does she have to do to be happy? Well, she has to be superwoman. She has to take unbelievable care of her husband. She's got to take unbelievable care of herself. She's got to take unbelievable care of her kids. She's got to be a great businesswoman and career-oriented person. She's got to make sure she comes home and that everybody's fed and everybody's nurtured and everybody's supported. And then she's got to be a great lover for her husband, and she's probably exhausted. See, the bottom line is today's woman's been conditioned. You got to be perfect. You got to be all these things in order to feel fulfilled. With that many rules, with that many things having to be perfect for a person to feel fulfilled, they set themselves up for tremendous pain. Because it's going to be so hard to be perfect in all those areas all simultaneously. I don't know how today's woman can do it, much less today's man. He's got all his rules, too, that have been conditioned into him. And I know they vary from person to person. But my point is, most of us got rules that make it difficult to feel good. Ask the average guy what he's got to do. He's got to be financially successful or successful in his career in order to feel happy. He's got to make it to a certain level. And you can't imagine what some people have done in terms of expanding their rules as they've done better. I was talking to a gentleman who's a big oil man. For him to feel successful, he has to have net available to invest in liquid assets for him on a consistent basis, $20 million. Now, think about that. That might create a little stress in your life. You know, that might be a little difficult for you to meet, especially if the most you've ever had liquid was $10 million. It'd be even worse, I guess, if you only had $10,000. But the point is, most of us have set ourselves up for failure, and some of us have rules that are impossible to meet. Classic example, a woman in a seminar one time in our Date with Destiny, and she had these problems in relationships. Couldn't figure out why her relationships never lasted, why she never felt fulfilled. Well, she had totally conflicting rules. Her rules were that if you're attracted to her and you're a man, the way you express your attraction is you're the aggressive one. You come up and communicate your attraction, and you chase her. She acts like she's not interested, and you chase her. But she has this other rule that says that if you chase her too long, then she loses respect, and you're no longer attractive to her. And so she never felt happy or fulfilled in a relationship. Are you following me a little bit on this? I know it may sound weird, but we humans are weird. We got all these weird ideas of what has to occur before we can feel something. We've talked about this 20 times in this tape, but I've got to remind you again. When I talk to people that truly are happy, one of the major reasons is they got rules like, in order to be happy, I have to wake up. Or people say things like, every day above ground is a great day. How do I know if I'm happy or not? How do I know if I'm successful? If I wake up and look that I'm above ground, then I'm successful. The people that are unhappy say, I have to be at 8% body fat. I have to have my children's respect all the time and never have them talk back to me and never get frustrated with them. I have to absolutely know that I'm loved by all people all the time. I have to know that there'll never be a nuclear war. I have to know for the rest of my life that whatever goals I set out, I really will achieve. I'll give you a classic example of rules. I was reading a book by Gregory Bateson called An Ecology of Mind. If you ever try to read Gregory Bateson, you know it's pretty heavy-duty stuff to try and be able to interpret what he means. But I came across a story that I thought was actually so simple and so profound. It was a conversation that basically he just typed out word for word as part of the transcript and never explained it in any real detail. It was a story about muddled things and perfect things. And what it was a conversation between himself and his daughter, where his daughter turned to him one day and said, Daddy, how come things get muddled so easily and they don't just stay perfect automatically? And Gregory Bateson, being a very intelligent man, said, well, what do you mean? And she said, well, you know, Daddy. She goes, you know, things just don't stay perfect. They're only perfect for a minute or two, and then they're not perfect anymore. They get muddled. They get muddled so easily. And he said, I don't think I understand exactly. What do you mean by perfect, and what do you mean by muddled? She goes, you know, perfect, like, you know, when everything is exactly where it's supposed to be. He said, well, how do you know when everything's supposed to be? She said, well, you know, like on my desk. And he says, well, what do you mean specifically? And she said, well, you know, and when the papers are here. And he said, what else? He said, well, when, she said, when the flowers are here. And he said, what else? He said, well, when the phone is here. And what else? When the books are here. When this and 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 this is all that, then it's perfect. He said, when is it muddled? She said, well, when any of that's not like that. He said, you mean if I just move the papers over here, it's no longer perfect? She goes, yeah, it's not perfect anymore. It's got to be here to be perfect. He goes, what if I move the flowers? Oh, yeah, that would make it. He said, you know what? The reason things are more muddled than perfect is not because things are more muddled, but because you got more ways for things to be muddled and less ways for things to be perfect. See, what a lot of us have done is we've set it up where 50 things all have to be happening simultaneously for us to feel good and be happy. But if just one's out of alignment, boy, do we get upset. In fact, have you ever noticed how things can be really great in your life, and then one thing, just one thing, can be out of alignment, and all of a sudden your whole focus goes there, and your mind goes crazy. You start getting all upset and everything else, when everything else in your life could be in great shape. We need to remind ourselves that if we got one thing going on well, things are going well. And the reality is, if you look at your life, how many things really are going well in your life if you were being honest with yourself? If you weren't judging by these unbelievable standards where everything has to be perfect simultaneously. Well, you were the ultimate man, the ultimate woman, the ultimate performer, the ultimate career person. How many things are really going well if you focused on them? But see, what we've got to do is we've got to make it so we have more ways to feel happy and less ways to feel unhappy. Point number 7. If you really want to be happy, use happy words to describe the way you're feeling on a consistent basis. Develop a habitual vocabulary that is filled with words that create pleasurable emotion within you. We have a lot more words that describe negative emotions than we do positive, and so we tend to use them more often sometimes. Anytime you're unhappy, I guarantee you, you're putting a word on your experience, a word that creates a judgment about it that is negative, that creates a negative emotion or feeling. So let me just offer you some words that are enjoyment or pleasure-oriented, happiness-oriented. Here they are: enjoyment, euphoria, a sense of well-being, a sense of contentment, ease, comfort, coziness, gratification, satisfaction, luxury, to relish something, to feel a zest for something, sweetness, entertainment, happiness, gladness, delight, delection, joy, joyfulness, cheer, cheerfulness, exaltation, exuberance, glee, sunshine, overjoyed, intoxicated, rapture, jubilation, celebration, gladdened, feasted, heartwarmed, fascinated, captivated, enthralled, enchanted, tickled, thrilled, beaming, basking in, starry-eyed, glowing, radiant. Those are just a few. What if when somebody said, how's it going? You said things different than, okay, doing all right, surviving, hanging tough. If you were to use those kinds of phrases to describe how you're feeling, what you do is you immediately denigrate your experience. You lower the level of enjoyment you have by the words that you're using. Amplify your emotion by using new labels. If you're going to judge instead of perceive? Why not judge by putting labels on your experience that make you feel great instead of words that make you feel lousy? It's a very simple thing, and it may sound so simple, you may not do it. So think about it. If when you felt pretty good, you said, I'm feeling excellent, I'm feeling outrageous, I'm feeling fabulous. If you kept saying that on a regular basis, would you not begin to feel that way rather than if you said, I'm doing okay, fair to middling? See, think about it. When you begin to use those phrases, you have to change your emotional state. You may be feeling great, but you say, I'm feeling okay out of habit. And pretty soon you don't feel as good as you could have. Pay attention to the vocabulary you use consistently. You want to be happier? Build up a vocabulary. Write down some words that you're going to use. Maybe some of the ones I just dropped on you to make yourself feel great. Or if you really want to feel like heck, here, I can offer you some words to use on a regular basis. Talk about how unpleasing things are to you, or displeasing, or disagreeable, or undesirable, or unappealing, or unattractive, or unengaging, or uninviting, or distasteful, or unsavory, or unpalatable, or ugly, or offensive, or objectionable, or repugnant, or contrary to your feelings, or repulsive, or vile, or nasty, or noxious, or rotten, or putrid. How's your life? How you doing today? Putrid. Think of how you'd feel if you did that. Horrible, horrid, atrocious, atrocity, hideous, terrible, awful, dire, hostile, antagonistic, averse, unfriendly, uncared for, unvalued, unprized, despised, lowly, unpopular, out of favor, misunderstood, misprized, unbeloved, uncherished, loveless, forsaken, rejected, jilted, thrown over, spurned. If you really want to feel bad, just pick from that list and use those kinds of words to describe your life, your relationships, your business on a regular basis. I guarantee no problem, you'll be depressed in a short period of time. See, if you want to change your life, change your habitual vocabulary. Do it now. Simple step, write down a couple of words you use on a regular basis to describe how you're feeling that make you feel even worse than you really were feeling. And then decide you're not going to use the words to describe yourself or how you're feeling for the next 30 days till you and I get together again. Sound like a deal? Just try it and see what happens. And in their place, write down the words that you want to use on a regular basis to describe how you're feeling, how you're doing in your life. And make sure they're words that amplify the positive emotion. That's point seven. Here's our final point. We'll wrap up. Point number eight on how to achieve your ultimate goal, happiness on a consistent basis. It's very simple. Hold yourself to a new standard. Yo, wait a second. I thought you said make my rules easier. You're right, I did, except there's got to be a new standard in your life. And your new standard is simply this. You adopt a belief that not to be happy is to be a failure. And for those of you who are motivated to succeed, this ought to really do it to you. What I mean is most people do not make happiness a big enough priority. If you decide right now that being happy is the only real success, then I suggest that you'll achieve it. Because we always get what we focus on, as we talked about earlier. We've got to make sure, though, that we must be happy. Not that we should be happy. Not that we could be happy. But that it's really a must. That it's something that must happen. That you must do it. Not the outside environment. Not your brother, your sister, your friends, your neighbors, your boss. But you. And that you can do it. If you really adopt that core belief and you measure on a regular basis saying, hey, I got to be happy. That's the way I got to live. Otherwise, I'm being abusive to life. Otherwise, I'm giving a slap in the face to my creator. What if you really looked at life that way? That not to enjoy the gifts that have been given you would be the ultimate blasphemy. One of the great teachers in my life is a man named Grandmaster Jun Ri. He's the grandmaster of Taekwondo and really the father of U.S. Taekwondo. He trains about 125 congressmen and congresswomen. He trained Bruce Lee in all of his kicks. And I've had the privilege of being his student and developed my black belt in Taekwondo and working with him. And the reason I really worked with him, the reason I selected to work with him and was able to take on the challenge and the opportunity is not because of his martial arts skills, but because his skills in life. Because here is a man who is as happy as anybody I know. In fact, the reason he's happy is he holds himself to that standard because he tells me constantly, the purpose of life is to be happy. Nothing else is more important. And everyone he talks to, and he says it with such glee and so much joy, and everyone around him feels so good. See, that's real success. You know you're successful when you feel so good inside that it comes out of you and reaches out and touches everyone else around you. I have to acknowledge Master Ri because a good deal of the standards I've developed around happiness, I think I've developed by my association with him. And I share the story both to acknowledge him and also to reinforce you that if you really want to be happy and you want to hold yourself to a higher standard, get around people that are happy. Get around people that make that a priority. And there are plenty of those people out there. So I suggest one of the ways to hold yourself to a standard is get around other people that hold you to that standard too, because it's easy to get off track, isn't it? It's easy to get caught up. It's easy to fall into the trap that most of our society does based on our conditioning. But if you're around people that hold you to the standard and say, come on now, you told me you want to commit to staying happy. How do we make this into something better? How do we make use of this? How do we turn this around? How do we turn this into an advantage? What can we learn from this until you at least feel good and we amplify that to happiness? That's part of the process of lifelong success. And that's what this Power Talk is about. Not just feeling good once in a while, but being able to do it consistently. And in holding yourself to the standard, it doesn't mean you never are unhappy. Because sadness, frustration, anger, and hurt, all those things that sound so terrible, they have their place too. And I want to acknowledge that. Because some of the greatest progress people make comes out of their pain. But see, most of us don't have to work on pain. Our conditioning takes us there easily. All I've tried to do in this tape is get you to think at a new level. Get you to focus on the possibility of swinging the pendulum where you spend a lot more time in the happiness mode and a lot less in the pain mode. And certainly you deserve that. You know what else is exciting about knowing that you can be happy at any moment? It also relieves you of the burden of trying to make everybody else happy. Now, I know you still do it because you care about people. I do too. But the reality is when you realize that you don't have to do anything for yourself to be happy in a moment, then you also begin to realize other people don't have to do anything either. They can be happy right now. You can stop trying to make everyone happy, which probably drives you crazy because you can never do it successfully. You might for the moment get someone to be happy. The only way they're going to be happy long term is when they claim their real power and when they stop buying into the lie that something outside them controls them. When they realize that the only reason they don't have the joy that they want is they've not claimed it. Everything we've talked about here to create happiness for yourself applies to others. If you really want to assist someone, educate someone to the reality of the joy that resides within them. Get them by asking them questions to note when they're feeling good that they're the one creating the feeling. So if they're creating it now, right now when things are working, couldn't they create that feeling when things aren't working so well, when they aren't meeting their goal in the moment? When you educate someone as to their real power, and when I say educate, I mean get them to experience it and know that they're in charge. You haven't just given them happiness for a moment. You've given them the ability to do what they do naturally. You've given them the ability to have this joy all the time. And that may be the ultimate gift. So don't work on making others happy. Educate them. Share with them. Give them an opportunity to remember who they really are. And maybe in sharing that with others, you'll remember it even more yourself. Remember, we all teach what we most need to learn. So share the lesson and watch your own life expand as a result. See, personally, I believe we've all been given a priceless gift. And the only way to be unhappy is to forget the joy that's around us all the time. What if your new standards were that you weren't successful no matter how well you did in business, no matter how many people you impacted, no matter how well your kids turned out, if you didn't enjoy the process? See, because I got to tell you, I don't care how successful somebody looks on the outside. If they're not feeling good on the inside, they're not successful. Because they really aren't giving their all. Because you can't give what you don't have working inside you. If you haven't activated those feelings, how are you going to give them to somebody else? And I'm not saying in this tape program, by the way, that the whole purpose is just to go out and bliss out and be by yourself and feel good, because you and I live in a Western culture. And as I've said many times, if you just sit in the Western culture and just bliss out and feel good, somebody will come and take your furniture. So you got to do more than that. And you do have to be active. But I'll tell you, my idea of success has changed throughout the years. Growing up poor, I thought it was money. Then I realized it certainly isn't money. It's contributing to other people. Then I contribute to other people, and I thought, gosh, that's not it either. I still don't feel fulfilled. I feel good about myself. I'm proud, but that doesn't make me feel totally fulfilled, because here I'm achieving, helping others, but I'm not feeling as happy as I could. I'm burning myself out. And what I've looked for in life is the balance. And I now have a new definition of success, and it's how I measure myself, and it's how I encourage others who ask me how to measure their own success. And the measure I have is a two-step process. Number one, how happy are you? And the bottom line is, if you're not happy with how happy you are, you can change that. You can do it in a moment. You can change the way you're breathing. You ask yourself a great question. You can focus on what's great in your life. You can use some contrast. There's so many tools you've got in this set of tapes. One of them alone could work. You don't have to use them all. You don't have to go through 8 steps to make it work. I said, but number two is, how happy are the people who are around you? See, because there was a time in my life when I had a standard only for my own happiness. And so I was happy, but nobody else knew it. They weren't happy being around me. So I made the distinction that I don't want to just be happy. I want to be cheerful. What cheerfulness really means to me is that you're so happy on the inside that you also express it on the outside so it affects the people around you. And so I guess my new definition of success is real simple. It's, am I living a life where I'm experiencing more and more pleasure and less pain? And in the process of living it, is the way I'm living it creating more and more pleasure for others and less pain for them? If I'm feeling better and better all the time, and I can get other people around me to feel better and better, if I can feel less pain, they can feel less pain, if we can continue to expand in that direction, I think there's a reason why our brain wants to move towards pleasure. It's because it leads us to a place where we're really connected with our Creator. That may sound weird to you, but I think there's a reason why human beings are wired the way they're wired. And I think the easiest way to get to your Creator, the easiest way to have that joy, is to know that those feelings are available now and to hold yourself to a standard where you cause yourself to feel them on a regular basis, not because you have to, but because you deserve to. But you got to hold the standard. So in summary, what have we said? Well, we've said a lot of things in this tape, but I guess the most important thing we've said is whether you're happy or not is not a question of whether the happiness is there. It's there inside of you at levels of intensity and of depths you've never dreamed of. But you got to open the spout. You got to let what's in you out. And you got to realize that you're really the source. You got to remember there's nothing outside of you that's going to create it for you. And that the only way to really have this ongoing happiness is to change your focus, to change some of your core beliefs, to realize you don't have to do anything to be happy. You don't have to be responsible to something to be happy. You don't have to achieve to be happy that you can happily achieve. You don't have to choose between the two. You don't have to give up being an achiever and a doer and a person that makes things happen and just be somebody who just blisses out. You can bliss out while you work. What a concept. You can feel so good while you make that difference with your children. You can feel so good while you build your empire that you don't have to wait to feel good. And then if you feel good along the way, you're liable to build the empire bigger. You're liable to have a better impact on your kids and maybe a better role model for them as well. Maybe the whole message of this whole tape is just to remind you that the only way you achieve your ultimate goal of happiness is by perfecting your mind, by taking control, by mastering it. And by the way, Dr. Barbara DeAngelis is the person I'm interviewing in the next tape. And you're going to love Barbara. She and I have become great friends. And since doing that interview, we've had a lot of great conversations together. And I just got to tell you, you're going to have a lot of fun with her and I on the next tape. And what you're going to hear is that she has great answers for you on how to make your relationships better. And the reason is she's asked a lot of great questions. And by the way, the reason she asked a lot of great questions about how to make relationships better is because she had a lot of lousy ones. And she'll tell you that too. So the bottom line is, we have answers if we concentrate our power. If you want to make your relationship better, I guarantee you can do it if you use this principle, concentration of power. Which means every day ask yourself questions. How can I make my relationship better? How can I learn from this? How can I utilize this? If you do that every day, your relationships will be great. But you got to ask questions consistently in that area and focus in that area. Really by establishing habits, the habit of happiness, because that's all it is. If a person's feeling depressed, it's a habit of focus. It's a habit of questions they ask themselves. It's a habit of comparing themselves to others in a way that disempowers them. It's a habit of looking to the outside for the joy and buying into the big lie. Stay out of the habit. Establish the new ones. And we're going to do it now with an assignment. The assignment is simply this. Right now, when this tape ends, I want you to do what we talked about earlier. I want you to answer the question, what has to happen for you to be happy? And write it in your journal. I hope you're keeping a journal. Write down on a piece of paper at the very minimum. And write down your old answer. Before you listen to this tape, what would you say has to happen for you to really feel happy? Get married, find the ultimate person to have a relationship with, be, you know, weigh 10 pounds less than you do now, make, you know, $100,000 a year, whatever things you've had inside your head, write them all down. Just get them outside your head and look at them. And as you look at them, I want you to do step two. Next to each one of those points, I want you to write why they are false. Why these things truly will not create long-term happiness. Does that mean you shouldn't go for the goals? Again, no, you should go for them. But what you should do is to know that all you're doing is using these as a ways to give yourself permission to feel good. And then instead of waiting, yeah, you can give yourself an extra boost because just that day you want to celebrate some more. But along the way, you're going to feel better. So step one is write down all the things you think you're going to need to be happy, or at least you used to think. Step two, write down why that's not true. Step three, I want you to write a paragraph to yourself in your journal about why you were committed to being happy every single day of your life and all the things you could be happy for if you really wanted to be. And when I say a paragraph, hopefully that paragraph will turn into several pages. What are all the things in your life that already work, that are already great, that you could already be grateful for, that could already make you feel incredibly happy from the fact that you're alive? I mean, think of people that are in hospitals and are thrilled because they're alive. They're thrilled. They're not in the same physical vitality health you are, and they feel joyous because they're alive, because they've made it through, because they've turned things around. I have a friend who took his wife just recently to Dr. Cooper's aerobics clinic to check out her physical health down in Texas. And in the process, they decided to take a chest x-ray of him, and they found out there was a tumor in there. And you know what? His whole world seemed to disappear in that moment. Nothing else that he thought was going to make him happy could make him happy at that point. You know what made him happy? He found out it was benign. He found out that he's got another lease on life. You know something? All those things out there that were supposed to make him happy didn't make him anywhere near as happy as knowing he still gets to live. Sometimes we have to lose something to remember how valuable it is. Don't let this be you. You don't need something to shake yourself up. Start now by appreciating what you have. Write at least a paragraph or a couple pages of all the reasons you're happy now. And here's the fourth point for the next 30 days till we get the chance to visit again. I'd like you to come up with two questions you ask yourself every morning that'll make you happy. Something as simple as, gosh, what am I really happy about in my life today? Or something like, what could I be happy about if I wanted to be happy now? Or maybe something more complex like, what's really important in my life that I'm already achieving? Instead of, gosh, how come I'm not accomplishing what I want in my life? I'd like you to come up with a couple questions like that that you ask yourself each day for 30 days, kind of as a mental diet, if you would. And while you're doing that, I want to make sure that when people ask you how you're doing, you come up with your own phrase. Like, how you doing? Excellent. Outstanding. How am I doing? Better than you could possibly imagine. See, that'd be fun to freak people out, right? They're so used to people saying, oh, pretty good. Okay, how are you doing? Yeah, pretty good. Develop that habit. Make sure each day you ask the questions and you start responding with a new level of passion to how you're really doing in your life. And you know what? You may just buy what you're saying. Out of the habit of talking this way, you may really begin to feel this way. And God forbid, if you were to start developing this kind of habit, will you feel good on a consistent basis? Because if you really start feeling good, you know what happens? This stuff is catchy. It's like a disease. It spreads to all the people within your sphere of influence. And all of a sudden, they're starting to feel good. And pretty soon, you become rather successful because you're experiencing tons of pleasure and very little pain. And the people around you are impacted by the way you live, and they start feeling better too. What a terrible world if we all did this on a consistent basis. Of course, we all know that's impossible. We know it couldn't feel good on a consistent basis, but what if we were wrong? Have you ever been wrong about what you're really capable of? And then you were pretty pleased to find out you were better than you thought you were? I think you and I every day begin to find out we're much more than we thought we were. We're much more than our physical body. We're much more than we ever dreamed was possible. Maybe just this physical body and this thing you call yourself is just a vehicle and there's a flame burning inside, that spirit of who you really are, which is greater than anything you've dreamed of. But I think the only time you really get in touch with that part of you is when you're feeling happy, when you're feeling that base level of joy, and you can have it right now. So claim your real power and achieve your ultimate goal today, and then do it again tomorrow and the next day and the next day. Don't make it something you reach for. Make it something you experience. Make it the way you live. So my challenge to you until we meet again is to remember, the world is as you see it. It's your mind, not the world, that's the source of all your experience. And if you don't like what you're experiencing, change what you're doing inside your head. Take control. And until I visit with you again, remember, live with power.